And we're back. Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm your host, Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param, and I'm joined today by
Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
And hey, Alex! Now, some of you will probably notice that James is not able to join us this week, which is unfortunate, because we will always miss James when he's not around. But
yeah,
James,
hopefully he gets back from that, like, dark, grim place he went.
And dark, grim place?
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
He got invited. He got an invitation from someone named Agrista, don't you remember?
Well, while James is gone, me and Alex, will take advantage.
Uh-oh.
What happened? I mean, this is oddly themed, considering our promotional sponsor this week. What happened, Alex? What did you break?
Apparently my lights have gone out. Give me a second. I'll see if I can fix it.
All right. So, we have some news before we get into today's topic, which is James comes back. We're actually going to be doing a no questions episode if we don't end up doing a create demiplane. We've been soliciting questions from the audience and from our Discord channel, as well as, you know, some friends we know that had some questions about Starfinder, and we will get to those. But this week, we're going to debut a new segment that we may be returning to depending on the popularity, and that is Make My Starfinder. And today's Make My Starfinder will be Steven Universe. The Make My Starfinder segments will be us looking at other famous pop culture and or sci-fi settings and seeing how we would adapt them to Starfinder because, and interrupt me if you disagree with this, I find that because Starfinder is adaptable and it's got the fantasy science, the science fantasy vibe going for it, it's actually very adaptable to different genres of play, from pure fantasy to cavemen all the way up to far future and even oddity. And because it is so adaptable, it is even better a choice than Pathfinder 1.0 for adapting it to various other properties. Also, it helps that the entire thing in Starfinder was kind of designed to let you emulate the play of episodic sci-fi shows, and especially pop and pulp sci-fi.
Yes. Oh, I hope this is good enough, Param. I know I look disembodied.
You totally just look like a floating head right now, but let's stop messing with it and just go with floating head Alex.
I'll keep my arms like this to like keep me in perspective.
It's okay. We've got a microphone. I mean, just, you could have worn any other collar but stark black today, Alex.
No, so I went outside today and I was doing yard work. So I was wearing something different today.
Right.
And then I took it off to do the yard work. And yeah, so I never put that top shirt on. So you're seeing the bottom layer.
Okay.
And now it's made me one with the blackness of space, I guess. I don't know.
So we're going to totally get that. But before we get that, we've got some news. Now, we announced this a little bit at last week's No Direction Prime, but this is especially apt now because Alex is here with me today.
And I am.
And Alex will be with me again next time this week, but not on our Twitch channel because No Direction is again partnering with Paizo to live stream PaizoCon and GenCon for you during those conventions. And for PaizoCon, Alex, my man here, is going to be one of my primary co-hosts during those shows. So while the Paizo panels are going on and throughout the convention, No Direction hosts will be running those streams. And between the streams, you're going to get our entertaining voices keeping you company, letting you know what's going on throughout the convention, and just sort of bringing a bit of color to the entire presentation. If you saw what we did for Gen Con, it's going to be a lot of that, but better, because we've leveled up and got more experience points for tackling that challenge, and it was way out of range. Oh, don't worry.
I mean, we don't have Larn.
I'm going to have to carry you. I'm just going to have to carry you.
Listen, you're gonna have to carry me out. Just strap me to that payload, and we'll get going. It'll be
Gotcha.
great.
No, it's gonna be great. We've been working with Paizo for weeks on this. We were super happy to finally get to announce it. And we hope you all enjoy those shows. We hope you tune in. This will all be on the official Paizo Twitch channel when we're doing it. But do not fret for those of you who are not able to watch us live during the show. Those recordings will be brought back to No Direction, as well as Paizo's YouTube channel, as well as all the other seminars that aren't live streamed, because there's something like 40 plus seminars going on at PaizoCon this year, and they all sound amazing. We will be recording as many of those as humanly possible to have on our, normal con coverage streams on the podcast. That will not change. But this live streaming thing is just a bonus. It's the cherry on top. It's going to be, gosh, what, almost 20 plus hours of No Direction and Paizo Entertainment.
Yes. And the best part is that if they tell us we can't bring any of these recordings back to our website with us, we've set aside an entire 4-hour period for Param to battle to the death with a Paizo representative of their choice.
Do not worry. We've already had the negotiations and the battles. The legal stuff has already been talked about. We will be bringing those recordings back. That is. Don't worry. Paizo will have the live streams on their YouTube channel. We'll have copies of them on our YouTube channel. The audio of everything will be in the podcast stream. You all will just have so much more to look forward to. And we hope to do our best to make it feel like those of you watching at home or waiting in line for your next game at the convention itself feel like you're at the convention.
For the record, don't fight Param. You'll help Param always wins.
No.
He's like the house in Fallout New Vegas.
And I'm also glad, we also are happy to, it's hard to be happy to announce an advertisement, but ever since Chimera game ads have stopped, I've always wanted to hear Ryan's voices again doing his advertisements. We've got a sponsor for today's episode, and well, before we dive into the topic itself, a word from our sponsor.
The advanced civilizations of the Grimmer Space have withstood whatever the universe has thrown at them. But as a group of godlike sorcerers invade with magic at their fingertips, their technological galaxy faces horrors it's never seen before. Iron GM Games, with creative developer Sean Astin and the best writers in role-playing, bring Hollywood-style sci-fi horror to you with Grimmer Space, a setting and adventure collection compatible with the Starfinder role-playing game. Grimmer Space launches on Kickstarter May 22nd, but you don't have to wait to get a taste of it. Download the first Grimmer Space adventure, Abattoir 8 by Richard Pett, on DriveThruRPG.com or OpenGamingStore.com for free today. It's a dangerous galaxy, Grimmer. Maybe you could save it, but in Grimmer Space, heroics have a price.
And thank you for today's sponsor. We appreciate the help. Now, let's talk about making our Starfinder for Steven Universe!
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
This is literally, I've wanted to do a Geek Together on this show for gosh. Since the end of season 4.
Oh man, season 4 was great. For those of you who are not familiar with the show, what is a good summary of what it's about without spoiling too much?
Oh my gosh, it's about a group of war criminals that have fun and sing and dance.
That's not quite how I would put it, Alex. The Steven Universe is a cartoon on the Cartoon Network. It is a sci-fi cartoon with a very cel-shaded style. And it is about a group of aliens that are gems, that are part-time superheroes, and the titular character, Steven Universe, who is half gem. And it is basically an homage to 80s sci-fi and anime in a way that very few shows could get away with. It's a fan favorite of a lot of people. I'm a fan of it. Alex is a fan of it. The Marlowes on the network are huge fans of it. and we've been looking for an excuse to talk about it. And we thought about, well, how would you adapt the world of Steven Universe to the Starfinder role-playing game? Because Starfinder seems especially apt to make that adaptation.
I mean, it really is. Starfinder is... It's got a couple of features in it that are unwittingly really good for the gems, I guess you could say, and in general. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to talk about how to adapt a show without talking a little bit about, like, what you see in that show. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, Steven Universe has this really interesting dynamic where because Steven is half gem and half human, episodes tend to either fall on one of those two spectrums. Either they explore Steven's day-to-day life as a human, or they explore his day-to-day life as a gem. And as the series progresses, those two worlds kind of start crossing over a little bit more, up until the point where, like, the finale happens. And the series finale is great. Or season finale? It might be... they haven't
really... It's really weird to describe it. There is at least... we do know there's a movie coming.
Oh, we know there's a season 6, too. The season 6 is confirmed.
Yeah.
They've already recorded episodes.
Excellent. So, it's a continuing series. We do recommend you check it out. It is...
It's good.
It is not... It is a strangely mature and diverse show that does not make itself obvious at first glance.
The first season is very slow.
When
I was introducing it to James, and James gave it a solid 7. This isn't... Hope Bright is not James's genre. James is more grimdark. Right. Like, James loves tragedy. He doesn't mind when the heroes win, but he wants them to have, like, crippling cost and just, you know, overwhelming the sorrow. Like, every show James has ever watched with me, with the exception of Konosuba, has been overwhelmingly depressing by the end of it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Konosuba is overwhelmingly depressing that such failures can continue to have such successes.
Yes, that's true. There's something about that that's a very true statement. All right. So, like, I guess, like, the best way to put it is, like, we should probably talk about, like, what a gem is for the purpose.
All right. So, the gem is an alien species in the galaxy. They're super advanced tech. They are all female presenting, and they're all very color-coded to the style of gem. So, they're one of the main characters they talk about is a pearl. And the pearls are sort of servant class of this species. Then there are rubies. Rubies are soldiers in the gems. They're little, short, squat, tough, and they fight well in large numbers. There were sapphires, which are oracles and very rare and to be protected. There are, there's so many different ones.
Yeah, and so, like, some gems even cross over, like... depending on what caste might be the best word, depending on which caste the gems are in, like, you'll have an amethyst, which has a similar role to, like, a topaz, which they're different colors, so they belong to a different color caste, but they have a similar job and similar, like, look.
And those are very big brute soldiers. And so... In addition to just being color-coded and having that physical gem in their bodies are actually just light projections, hard light projections for the sci-fi nerds out there.
Their bodies are just an illusion.
Yeah. They can each of the types of gems summons a unique weapon that is very reminiscent to the Solarian weapons and are able to use them in battle. When the gems are damaged to a certain point, they poof, which means that their hard light bodies vanish and the gem falls to the ground. If the gem is cracked, it permanently damages the gem from that point forward. And the worst fate for a gem is to have their core gem shattered, killing them.
One way to think about gems that gets brought up from time to time in the series is that the gem itself is almost like a computer. Mm-hmm. And the computer projects the body around it, so to speak. And I think a computer is a good way to talk about them, because when a gem is created, they basically appear for the first time knowing exactly what they were designed to do, what their purpose is. Mm-hmm. And a large part of the show is identity, like just in general, who are you, figuring out who you are and coming to terms with that and picking an identity for yourself that matches what who you know yourself, I guess you could say.
And in the show, the Crystal Gems, the titular Crystal Gems, are a group of rebel gems who have rebelled against the Gem Empire on the planet Earth, which is where the show mostly takes place at the early seasons, and so that they can have identities beyond just this purpose that they were created for. They're basically representing freedom, self-identity, and actualization. And then the Gem Empire, which is cast as the main antagonist for the show, very much want to colonize planets, use them to the most, like they have a, they're devoid of emotion. They have set purposes. They want to use planets for the most efficient purpose, which is usually to mine its resources and turn them into gem producing factories. Which of course does not do well for the local flora and fauna, which is again, one of the primary motivating reasons that the Crystal Gems exist is Earth was full of cool things like humans. And they liked humans, and so rebelled to protect them.
It's interesting because the way that a gem is created, it almost implies that, like, yeah, it takes away a lot of the minerals. Like, a peridot gem is made out of the same material as, like, what we would consider, like, a peridot you would use as jewelry.
Right.
But, like, the process of extracting the planet's minerals and creating a gem kind of takes something a little bit more, something metaphysical, because the land that gets used to make gems can't really be used for like growing anything. It just becomes barren wasteland. Right. So like there's something a little bit like beyond there.
So we don't want to turn this cast into just talking about the show and how great it is and its different angles, but this is a good enough foundation that you can understand so that you can understand how we were going to develop this into a setting for Starfinder on this show. Now, we will have to talk about other aspects of the show as we go, but let's start with the gems themselves, because they seem to be the different thing. It's basically Earth if these gem empire and gems were involved in Earth. Earth is at a modern tech level in the show, and so we pretty much need to talk, well, how are we going to handle gems? Are they a species? Are they a class? Definitely.
They're definitely
both.
They're definitely a race. Yeah, definitely
a species. Okay.
Yeah, species.
So, how are we going to handle the species of gem?
So, the way that I would do it is when you get knocked to negative hit points, like in Starfinder, when you hit zero, normally you just go unconscious. And I feel like the easy way to do that for gems would be like if you get knocked to zero hit points, like you poof and your physical body disappears. And maybe gems can stabilize, but they can't spend resolve points to like get back into the fight. That's something that you see in Steven Universe, where like if a gem poofs, it usually takes them anywhere from a few hours to a few weeks to reform.
Yeah, actually, you're supposed to be days and weeks, because when they do try to reform within hours, they always come back wrong. So definitely the poofing aspect needs to be unique to the gems. You go to negative gem, you're a physical object. People can just pick you up and put you in your pocket at that point. You're a tiny, hand-sized little thing, and you don't got much control beyond that.
I would probably say you're about the size and shape of like a Solarian crystal, so a weapon crystal. Right.
I would also say that if you poofed on a crit, there's a chance it cracks the gem, because getting that gem cracked is big risk.
I think that like any crit that's done to them should just function like severe wound, and like that wound is what manifests that like is like one of the things you see in the show is that if a gem cracks, like it gets like the coating that shows how the gem's appearance looks goes faulty, and like they look wacky and crazy. So like saying like, hey, if a gem is crit, the person dealing the crit can choose to either add or replace their crit effect with a severe wound crit effect. Like that could just be something that they do. That would be my opinion.
Okay, so let's look at the main stats for this species. What do you think their hit point should be? What should their hit point adjustment for gems be?
I think that if they're going to have the downside that going to zero makes them unable to act for a long period of time, they should have six.
Okay.
Like, they should be durable. And we see them, like, jumping off of buildings and stuff in the show. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, they definitely, even the weakest of gems, like a Peridot, which is, like, a science-y, techie-based gem, takes a lot of beating in the show before before they show any damage or poof. So, I think six works good. And what about their ability score adjustments?
I think that we should, you know how Lashunta have like different sub races? I think that the race should have different sub races based on like what type of gem they are. And so I feel like all gems should probably have constitution, and then like your secondary is dependent on what kind of gem you are. Like, you wouldn't expect an amethyst to be intelligence based, but you might expect a Peridot to be intelligence based. So I think
it comes into two different categories. You have intelligence based gems, like your Peridots and your Sapphires and your leaders, and then you have your brute gems. There's not a lot of in between. There's not a lot of dexy gems. They either go for the big strong hit, or they're super specialized. They're super specialized gems.
I don't know. I feel like Aquamarine doesn't fit well into that. She's definitely not intelligence based.
No, she might be wisdom based. So maybe three gems. Maybe there's three.
I mean, because she's If anyone was dex-based, it'd be Aquamarine. She flies around with her little wings. Lapis might even be dex-based. She flies, too. I think that there's a...
But those are both primarily casters.
I guess, kinda.
Yeah. Aquamarine has a magic wand.
Yeah, but she only does one spell.
Yeah, she does it well.
She's the mega mean of gems.
But I want to say universally all gems have minus charisma, because they do not seem to understand the concept of free will until they have it forced into their brain.
So I don't like that. The reason is that I would argue that the reason that they don't understand free will is because of their society. That's not really a flaw in how they're built. I would not do charisma, especially since, again, Aquamarine has like the biggest personality that you'll ever see. I think that they should not have a charisma penalty. If I was going to give them a penalty, I would probably do wisdom, to be completely honest. Wisdom. The reason I would do wisdom mm-hmm. is they are not really good at understanding how people are feeling, and that is sense motive. That's not charisma. They don't understand other people. Whenever we see a gem interact with a human, like, even the smallest things that they do are just weird. It's almost like how androids function. And I know that the base android has a charisma penalty.
Right, which is kind of where I wanted to go with that, because they almost act like robots.
Yeah, but I'm thinking that wisdom is the better penalty, just because a lot of them are just silly and goofy, too. Like, I feel like the rubies would have a wisdom penalty, not a charisma penalty. I feel like, you know, Jasper is so single-handedly focused on what goes on in the show that she doesn't really critically think about anything, and that is kind of like not using your intuition, which is your wisdom. I think wisdom might be the better one. Even Garnet has that issue where she has the ability to see into the future, but like, she gets so overwhelmed by all of this possibility, like, she can't figure out what people are going to do, which makes it so that there's a point where she can't figure out what a character is going to do. She doesn't understand their perspective and what they're doing, that she literally loses her ability to see into the future, because she no longer understands the person and their motivations.
Okay.
So that is why I think wisdom would be the better one.
Okay. So
also, charisma is singing, and they sing great.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Okay, so I think you've convinced me on that one. So wisdom is the universal penalty, and that means three different specializations. I definitely think strength is the obvious one. There are so many of the gems that are just big, strong warriors. They hit things with big melee objects, and they do it well. And also, each gem has a special power. So, like, some of them control water, some of them move metal, some of them turn into Sonic the Hedgehog.
So I would go with with a military gem for one of the options. Mm-hmm. That would be your strength based. Okay. That's like quartzes. That's probably rubies. Go ahead.
I think we should call them castes because they definitely is a caste based society.
Yeah. Okay.
So warrior caste.
Yeah. I think then we've got aristocratic caste. That would be like your peridots, your lapises, your sapphires. We know that those are high ranking gems and most of them have spell casting. So it makes sense that they have either intelligence or charisma.
Right. So maybe they could pick one. Yeah. I think we need to divide it into three. One is the strengthers. One is the science. They talk about science all the time. You got your peridots and your I guess peridot is really the big one they focus on, but they also have the lawyer gems and the bureaucratic gems, but they always are very logical in their arguments. So I think those are end. And then you have your leader class gems. These are your diamonds. These are any of the mid-grade leaders. And I think those will be ka. Since we're making charisma not the penalty, I think those are charisma-based gems.
Yeah,
and definitely. I do not see any dex-based gems where one of the other stats isn't kind of overriding it.
I am sure we're going to get that someday. I wouldn't be surprised, like, as we see the larger world, that, like, we learn that they have, like, spies and stuff, and those are the dex ones. But from what we've seen in the show in the current six seasons, I think that military caste, maybe bureaucratic caste, and then aristocratic caste.
Okay. That works. And then you get and then, obviously, each gem gets a weapon. So it's easy enough to have a melee weapon stat, you know, able to summon a weapon that does blah damage, model it after like probably d8 damage and counts as advanced. That would be easy enough to do, but how are you going to handle this as a species?
You could handle it the way that the crystal race in Empire of Bones handles it. There's a race in Adventure Path number 6, Empire of Bones, that has the ability to turn its arms into like swords as a natural attack. So you could make it so that the gem weapon is literally just a natural weapon. So like it augments their unarmed strikes. I don't think we've ever seen a gem fight unarmed. Like, I don't think we've seen one. I think they almost universally fight with their weapon. So if we say that they're like natural weapons, and because they're made out of the same hard light as their body, that kind of makes sense.
Mostly fight unarmed and then they pull knives out at the very end of their episode?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Only one pulls out a knife ever.
Right. That's the leader. The rest of rubies fought fist.
Yes. And I mean, I think that's true. But if you were going to enhance your unarmed strikes, and unarmed strike is their gem weapon, that would make sense too.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And since natural attacks count as unarmed strikes, if you took improved unarmed strike, you actually would be good at punching people in addition to stabbing them with your gem weapon.
And we would need a set of appropriate BAB gated species feats to increase the damage of that.
If you made it a natural weapon, natural weapons count as unarmed strikes. So you could literally just take improved unarmed strike and it would boost the damage of the gem weapon.
Right, but that's only going to happen once, right?
No, it happens every few levels as you level up.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's easy enough?
You would have to make, if you wanted it to be more like an advanced melee weapon, you would need another feat, because I think it hits pretty close like to an in-between between advanced and basic, but the baseline just improved unarmed strike would do it.
Right. And we could write that into the species as part of this ability, because every species is allowed one big ability, and this is kind of it for the gems, that if they take improved unarmed strike or make a special feat that's just theirs, that's just improved unarmed strike, but the damage die is higher.
Yeah.
Because this is sort of their thing. They fight with the weapon that they are born made for. It is also shown in the show that the weapons can receive attachments. So any attachment that can attach to an advanced melee weapon should be allowed to be used on your gem weapon when it is summoned.
Definitely. I agree with that. I think another thing that would be interesting is if when you picked your gem cast, you got to pick like a cut or and when they talk about different gem species, they talk about like cuts and facets. In terms of like your cut is like the type of gem you are, and the facet is like based on like your ranking or your like number among that type. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it would be interesting if you're like, I'm a militaristic gem. I'm picking Amethyst. And because it would actually be Quartz, because Amethyst is a type of Quartz soldier. And the Quartz soldiers are all pretty much the same. But Quartz could have the Ferocious Charge universal ability, like the Uplifted Bear does. And Ferocious Charge could be like this spin dash thing that they do mm-hmm. in the show, where they kind of like Sonic and charge at people. Mm-hmm. And if you had it, so like, hey, if you're a Topaz, you have this. If you're an Aquamarine, you have this. You
know, that Aquamarines would have to have telekinesis as a racial ability.
I mean, they might, but they can also fly with little wings. It would have to be that you get like a bunch of the flight would be like a minor thing they get, and then like another minor thing would like Lapis's would be the hydrokinesis, and then. Because Lapis Lazuli is like they can grow water wings out of their back, which lets them fly. Mm-hmm. But she can also control water, and lapises are for terraforming. So like they can like manipulate water and use it to erode stuff. But this other type of gem, Aquamarine, can make the water wings and fly around too. But her powers are all about lifting and moving stuff via telekinesis. Mm-hmm. So like if you had it, so like both of those were like minor abilities, and they both kind of combined it together to be a major, that would work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, any other things that the... I don't see a natural armor bonus applying here. No. I don't see anything like that. If anything, they do sort of face tank a lot of hits in the show. They don't seem to understand the concept of dodge.
No, they just put their hands up and block. Mm-hmm. They're not really good at not being hit. Okay. I feel like a lot of gems would take enhanced resistances, but I don't think that would be a feature of the species.
And something else about the species that we will need special rules for is merging.
Yeah. So gems can do a thing in the show called fusion, mm-hmm. where it's kind of like if they are mentally and emotionally in sync, they can combine their hard light forms together into a larger, more powerful gem. Mm-hmm. If you combine with a gem that's the same kind as you, it makes a bigger version of you. So like two rubies make a bigger ruby. Mm-hmm. But if you fuse with a gem of a different kind, then you make a brand new gem.
Right. And of course in the show, the storyline, gems aren't supposed to mix and match. That's one of the big self-identity issues explored throughout the show. And we will not give any spoilers in that direction, but it is a major concept. So how are we going to handle fusion? Fusion is like core to the whole concept of the show.
I think that if you were going to do it, it would have to be something like a summon monster template.
I was thinking we could go to the game's heritage and pull out an option that helps us here.
Okay.
A gestalt option.
So when you do it, I feel like it needs to be something that you can build pretty quickly, though. Mm-hmm. Like, how are you thinking of this?
Well, gestalt is definitely not something to do very quickly. So I would recommend, this would probably be something a player set would prepare in advance. Because if you're GM, you're just going to use the monster creation rules. Mm-hmm. So how I would handle it is for every, and they do introduce these fusions very slowly throughout the show. Mm-hmm. Because you have to be totally in sync with the person you're going to fuse with. It's not something that you usually do on the fly unless you are very, very well compatible with each other. The first time usually happens on accident, but only after these characters have a strong emotional bond. There are exceptions, and things go badly in those exceptions.
Oh, I mean, there is an emotional bond, but it's not love or trust or friendship like all the other ones. It's,
no.
It's definitely an abusive emotion.
Oh, yes. Unbridled hate is such a great character fuel. So what I would do is I would recommend that the two characters that would do this would gestalt their characters together, but they're always more powerful when they do that too. They go up a size category, give from whatever size category the two were start. You take the biggest one and bump it up a size category.
You take the biggest one and you bump it up by one size category for every gem in the fusion.
Yeah. Mm. So gestalt the characters, and when you create this gestalt of the character, create that character three or four, maybe even five levels higher, because they get a humongous power bump when they do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way that would work in campaigns is it would give the freedom for the GM to add big, big challenges that have a bigger, higher cap swing all of a sudden, and then it is fusion time because it's the only way you're going to handle it.
So what I would say is make the power cap bump three.
Okay.
Because that's typically the highest that you see in a standard fight. Mm-hmm. So that means it would take what would normally be a hard fight and level the playing field, mm-hmm. which is pretty fair if you are basically cutting down your action economy in half. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you do only, they are only one character from that point on.
Yeah. And I would say that, I mean, I still think that using the array would be a good fit. Like, so you would say, all right, take the highest leveled CR between the two of you, add three to it. And then what you would do is you would apply the class graphs from both characters and basically pick any ability that you would get in a class graph. And the creature has all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would be my suggestion.
Yeah. And you get both gem powers. Usually there's another unique power if it's from two different gems, so work with your GM on that one. This is something you do either way. You have to build this thing in advance. This isn't something you're going to be able to pull out of the back pocket in a hurry. I mean, my Starfinder is actually so flexible that the GM could say, could do the fusion thing and then do like they do on the in the show itself. And it's a commercial break. Give me 5 minutes, gang, and we're going to put this thing together.
So it actually kind of depends on the relationship, whether or not the fusion gets a new power, because from what we've seen, Alexandrite doesn't really have a new power when her three components fuse together.
We just didn't like, see it. They do explicitly state that there is a unique power in the show.
Yeah. They say it's fire breath, right?
Well, no. I don't know what it is for Alexandrite, but in the show, there's a line where they say a new fusion comes with a unique power that came from neither of the original gems.
Yeah, I think that's the Sardonyx episode where they're doing the silly Deadpool-style one, right?
No, that is the Smoky Quartz episode when she's doing the interview.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about, okay. The one Sardonyx is interviewing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that one, she says that Alexandrite's unique power is fire breath.
Okay, yes.
So, yeah. I just don't think that they ever showed it in like the two big fights that Alexandrite has.
Good point.
Yes.
All right, so that's easy. We've got the gems themselves covered. We've got their core cool ability covered. What do we do with Steven? He's a half gem.
So probably what Steven would need is he would probably need like almost like a half gem race, almost, I think, or ancestry, species, whatever.
Species, we're in Starfinder mode right now.
Yeah, I would say that it probably drops like... It probably drops like the big racial trait from your species. So like for Steven, it probably replaces his bonus feat.
Because the human size wouldn't get the bonus feat. And honestly, throughout the course of the show, Steven is almost more gem than human when you do the long examine of it. So giving up a lot of the human abilities would be good.
I think he has, like, he's good at picking up human skills. And he is, I think he's a pretty skilled kid. So I would say that keeping the bonus skill ranks makes sense for a half gem. Yeah. But like,
the gems are immune to, we didn't say this, but they don't have to breathe. They don't have to eat. Those are all Steven things that Steven has to do because he's still got that human body part. So if you're a half gem, you do need to eat. You still need to... He very specifically still needs to breathe. They show that several times in the show.
Yeah. Several times.
Yep.
It's a big deal.
Also, Steven doesn't poof. Steven will die at zero hit points like a normal person.
That's kind of a spoiler.
Well, we don't... It's not really, but... Throughout the whole show, it's just like, Steven doesn't poof, he gets hurt and breaks his arm and gets cuts and lacerations. Oh, gosh.
These things you're doing to this poor boy, Perim, shame on you.
Yeah.
So, I feel like instead of that bonus feat, he would definitely get, like, the half gem would get the gems cast bonuses. But even then, it's such a weird situation because... Mm-hmm. Like, we can't spoil it, but there's a strong implication that there is a reason that there's only one half gem and it's Steven. And, like, I part of me almost wonders if we shouldn't have a half gem race because of Like,
he's very unique.
Yeah. He's almost like a unique creature. So like I part of me, like I feel like you can't really play a Steven Universe game without a Steven Universe character choice, but the way it's set up, it's like it doesn't seem very likely that there are ever going to be more people like Steven. Mm-hmm. At least that's that after watching the entire series and walking out of the greatest episode of the series, that's sort of the impression I get.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I feel like we should have the option, maybe kind of like how, like, yes, you could do an Avatar world, but like, if you don't have an Avatar option, then do you really have an Avatar world? No. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So we need, I think it needs to exist. Definitely, yeah. Give up the human bonus feat. You give up the shape. He has all the other gym abilities. He's able to make his body look like whatever he actually wants it to look like.
You know what you could do? It would be really smart. You make it its own race, right?
Right.
And then you make it work like the Boray from Pact Worlds. The Boray are a undead race where they are an undead version of another species. And as part of their ability, they get to pick, they get a specific ability from their base species.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So like, I would say that the half gem has to be the same creature type and creature subtype as whatever it is, because mm-hmm. Steven is not a construct. Like, but at the same time being like, hey, you get this one power, this one specific power from your base race, and then everything else is from your this heritage.
So I agree, but I think we'd be looking at it backwards. If we look mm-hmm. at Steven as the example, it isn't that he's human with a little bit of gem sprinkled on. It's the reverse. He's almost a pure gem with a tiny inch of human sprinkled on.
That's why I think we should do it like the Boray, mm-hmm. because the Boray are undead with that one trait from their base, from their original species.
So, and I think for Steven, it would just be mortality, yeah. which is actually just get mortality. So the opposite of the Boray, they are mortal. And the skill, like you said, he does pick up skills real fast, but then everything else is gem.
Yeah. Well, if you set it up like the Boray, where this is a half gem species, and you have one ability that says like, gosh, what do the Boray call it? Give me a second. I'm gonna actually look it up so I know what I'm talking about. Right. The Boray have a racial trait that's called Old Talents, and that lets them get one specific racial trait from their original race. And so, like, if everything else they had was unique to the half-gem race, and they had that one ability that said, hey, you get this other racial trait depending on what you originally were, it would actually let you make a half-gem out of any species that you wanted. You could take the Steven Universe gems, plop them into the middle of Absalom Station, and you could have a half-gem Vesk or a half-gem Yosoki if you really wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right that by giving them ability that basically says like they count they're living creatures, you know, they get minor bonuses against stuff that contracts would get bonuses to, but they're not immune. I think that works. I think that's a strong design.
Right. Yeah, because I think giving up those immunities from the gym is more than a price to pay to get a tiny little bit of Vesk.
Skill ranks.
Yeah.
Skill ranks.
Yeah, that doesn't work. I would if there was a skill called immune to mortal peril, I would take that skill every level.
I mean, is anybody immune to mortal peril in that show, though? I'm pretty sure everybody almost has something horrible happen to them at least once.
Yeah, it's a very harrowing show through the course.
Okay, it's a very harrowing show.
All right, so we've got about 10 minutes left. Let's look at the rest of the basic concepts of Starfinder and see what translates over. Because we've done the most of the heavy lifting, because the show itself is still modern/sci-fi. The magic is totally there because the gems have magical powers, and there's a lot of magical mysticism in it. So the science fantasy works great.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question. Do you agree with me on this?
Mm-hmm.
Steven is absolutely an envoy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely an envoy.
Yeah, yeah. He is totally an envoy. Yeah. Garnet is totally soldier.
As long as her base powers give her something that lets her see the future, yes.
Okay, so she's got a bunch of psyker stuff.
She's a soldier with the psychic archetype.
Yes, yeah, totally. Amethyst is
She's just a soldier.
Yeah, just a soldier. Would Amethyst be soldier or would Amethyst be specialist?
No, she's literally a pro wrestler in one. She's a soldier.
Okay.
Pearl, I would say, is probably the closest thing to an operative in the series.
Yeah.
I think that just between her fighting style, the fact that she kind of identifies as being physically weaker than the other gems, and the fact that she can... I feel like compared to Amethyst and Garnet, she is just adapted to being on the planet more and just has such a wider skill set than the rest of them. Like, she builds starships, she can cook food, she like sword fights, she dances, she sings.
She's like, completely overpowered, just like...
Like the operative.
You abbreviate it OP.
That one episode where she fights Sugalite, she definitely gets her trick attack in and wins the fight.
And she does her whole ninja thing.
Yes.
All right. Let's go down the rest of the Crystal Gems. Lapis Lazuli.
Mystic.
Yeah, totally Mystic. Peridot.
Mechanic.
Mechanic or Technomancer?
She's a mechanic She's a mechanic with the same option that James's character in Stellar has.
Oh. All right.
And then she loses that ability and then kind of goes back and forth. But I see what you're meaning, because she does develop a more magical power later.
Mm-hmm.
And that could definitely... Actually, you know what? I'm going to take mechanic back. Technomancer. Definitely Technomancer. Mm-hmm. She's a Technomancer with the powered armor feats.
Bismuth.
Oh, I'm between mechanic and soldier. I kind of like mechanic because she does all the crafting.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if her gem was flavored as like a special exocortex thing that made her fight better, mm-hmm. then I think that we could make a case for her being an exocortex mechanic.
Okay. Bloodstone.
He doesn't have class levels. He's a first level, and he's a CR1 half NPC.
No, he's a CR1 skill check challenge.
I can't believe you made me address that. That is the one episode of Steven Universe that I would call a C. That is the one that I flat out told James he wasn't allowed to watch.
Oh. All right. So we've got classes for the main crew. What about the diamonds?
I definitely think that Blue is a mystic.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got all those emotion powers. Yellow is probably a technomancer, considering she can just shoot ridiculously powered beams of energy that poof everything.
White diamond.
She's a unique CR25 creature who is just great. She doesn't have a class. That's my official answer.
Now, does starship combat come into this anywhere?
Yes, because it is featured in at least one episode on screen.
Right. Plus, they do have starships, and that's their primary method of travel.
Yes, and it's great because just like an adventure path, there's one there is one starship fight for every 100 normal encounters.
And some creatures that would probably put up a good fight against a starship. No, explicitly does put up a fight against starships.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
It happens. It's great.
Yep. All right. Now there's other options that might tie into a product you've written. Your occult Starfinder products, because there's definitely totally is corruption in the show.
Oh, there totally is corruption. I would have to write a special corruption that could only work on the gems, which you could totally do with those rules.
Yeah,
basically, corruption reverts a gem into a more like bestial animalistic form. So you just find a good corruption that could wipe away all those pesky memories and mutates you into a monster while you go to it. It'd be great.
This is the smallest amount of spoiler, but we can't mention the corruption. Basically, the first part of the show, and very early on in the show, they let you know this, but it makes you think you're watching a Monster of the Week show, but the monsters are just gem corruptions. So you would turn into weird bug things as basically your hard light projections all broken.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's very it's and they so like what they reveal it and you're like, oh, that's a twist and it's good, and then like they just keep making it more and more horrifying. Right. Like the amount of body horror they go into it is not what you would expect in a kid's Hope Bright show.
Now we're coming up on time, but for the rest of Starfinder, I think because Steven Universe is very much an homage to so many different famous old star sci-fi and space shows, like Star Blazers is just explicitly called out so many times during the show.
The last episode has so many Gurren Lagann references, I can't even handle it.
Yeah, so especially if there's a lot of 80s and 90s anime, a lot of Outlaw Star references in the show, and these are all influences that have influenced Starfinder itself. No Star Blazers, Outlaw Star, Gurren Lagann were all some of the things that were mentioned during some of the presentations about Starfinder and its influences. So the game itself will help fairly easily. So this was actually one of the easier shows to adapt than I thought it would be. Okay. Once you figured out what a gem was going to be in the rules. Mm-hmm. So there you go. It'd be pretty easy to get your Steven Universe campaign going in Starfinder. Now, before we go, I want to again shout out to our next week's PaizoCon. As Darren Caldemeyer, the official PaizoCon correspondent, has told us, it has been 9 days from time of this recording until PaizoCon. I am not ready. Holy goodness.
Man, I don't know what I would do without Darren. Probably miss my flight.
Yeah. Thank you, Darren! We appreciate it. Now, we're going to be at the con, so we won't have a live show on this channel. Actually, Wednesday will be a lot of us just being in Seattle, some setup, and not a lot of live show. Oh, you won't see anything from us on Wednesday.
But I'm going to be playing in a game. It's going to be great.
Thursday morning, when the con starts in earnest. Actually, no, it starts on Friday, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So Wednesday, I'm on the plane.
Uh-huh.
And then Thursday, it's all set up and hanging out in Seattle. But the show hasn't started. So starting on Friday of next week, early in the morning, the live show starts. No direction for 3 days of streaming of awesomeness. With Paizo presenting for all the Paizo panels. It's going to be a great time. Check out the official Paizo Twitch channel for that. It will, of course, be hosting it on the No Direction channel if you want to watch it here. And do check out. We do want to shout out to our Discord channel! Our Discord server, rather. You can get there at the Discord link at nodirectionpodcast.com. We have the most amazing Starfinder and Pathfinder community going if you want to talk to us about any geeky topic, but especially Starfinder, Pathfinder, and related topics. Go on there. All the staff of No Direction Network is hanging out on there. It's a great place to talk to us, to talk to other fans. And we try to keep that a very chill environment. We do not let it become toxic. It is a great place to hang out and relax without a lot of drama. We love our Discord server. It's wonderful.
We even get like celebrities popping in and chatting.
Oh, yeah. It is not an uncommon sight to see Paizo staff popping in and giving us a chat.
Yeah, it's pretty great. You should awesome. Do it. Come yep. on.
Speaking of, NoDirectionPodcast.com is where you can find this show and all of our amazing content, including blogs written by some of the best writers in role-playing. We do almost daily content on that, or daily content, depending on what we're doing this week. And so there's always something to check out at NoDirectionPodcast.com every weekday. We take the weekends off. We like to do things like play Pathfinder Society and watch movies.
Yeah, we can't be good co-hosts.
Or record podcasters. Episodes of Adventurous and Stellar and other things. So those other pesky podcasts.
We got to shout out to that. We're doing
the Stellar. That's the exact day is for our insiders.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yes.
So do pay attention. Coming up soon, you're going to see Stellar happening. Insiders have already been told the exact date to watch it live. But Stellar is our upcoming Starfinder actual play podcast. You're going to love it. We're going to be going through Against the Aeon Throne, the adventure path Against the Aeon Throne. I'm playing a bear. Alex is playing a Skidermander. It's so cool times. The rest of the cast is awesome. And I know you're all going to enjoy that. And of course, none of this will be possible without our supporters on Patreon. Thank you all at patreon.com/nodirection or by clicking on the Patreon link at nodirectionpodcast.com. You can support this channel. It's only through our Patreon support that we have been able to expand the network as much as we've had and add these new shows such as Adventurous and upcoming Stellar. And as if you want to see this sort of content continue, please consider supporting us if you can on Patreon. All that money goes directly into supporting the network and growing the network. We appreciate everything you all can do for us.
And if you do, then I'm not bound to not tell you when our Stellar game is, because we will have already told you.
Right. Well, so one of the backer levels is Insider. There's a special channel on our Discord channel where we give you all sorts. The insiders have already seen all the character art for Stellar, for instance, and knows when the recording is. We appreciate that game. So, until next time, I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param.
I'm Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
Go Beyond.